This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Tony will be hosting the program beginning at our second time block at 22 minutes after the hour. But opening up the program today, I am Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow here at Family Research Council in Washington.
I'm Chris Gasek.
And Tony will be joining us from North Carolina.
Right.
He asked us to do the first part of the program today. Of course, we have 1 week to go before Election Day, and the polls show the race tightening. So we're going to be talking about that in just a moment. But Tony will be taking your calls during the last segment of the program today at 42 minutes after the hour. So let me go ahead and give you the call-in number right now in case you want to write it down and join in the conversation yourselves. That number is 1-866-372-7234. I'll give it to you one more time in case you were scrambling to get something to write with. If you want to ask a question or make a comment, Tony Perkins will be taking your calls beginning at 42 minutes after the hour. And the number is 1-866-372-7234.
You haven't done that in a while, so this is like,
it's
like getting ice cream for you. It's a big treat.
The famous slow count.
The Sprigg phone number recitation.
Right. So we do want to talk in this opening block about the polling data on the presidential race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. One of the most recent polls released just this morning, the ABC News Washington Post poll, is one of the first in quite a long time to show Trump actually ahead of Hillary Clinton by one percentage point within the margin of error, but still significant. And with us to talk about that and the general trend in the polling is Scott Rasmussen. He is president of the Rasmussen Media Group and a senior fellow at the King's College. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you today.
So, I've been looking at some of the polling data online and so forth, but give us your take. How do you see the state of the race right now in terms of what the polls are showing us?
Well, there's a couple of things that are going on. The race was tightening before we heard any news about the FBI reopening the email investigation. So we saw that in the ABC Washington Post poll you mentioned a moment ago. We saw it in a lot of other polls. It appears to have tightened a little more since then, but we don't have a lot of good data on that. What this means to me is it looks like Republican voters are coming home. A lot of those people who said, we'll never vote for Donald Trump, we're going to file a protest vote, have decided at this time that Hillary Clinton is just unacceptable. So they are supporting Donald Trump in higher numbers than earlier in the year. The question is, are there enough independent voters and others who are now switching, or perhaps enough Clinton voters who are discouraged that they might stay home, to put Trump over the top? And that's something we just don't know.
Right. I think that turnout issue is an important one for people to bear in mind. And I've seen some people suggesting that there may be a bit of an enthusiasm gap working to the disadvantage of Clinton, Democrats are just not that enthusiastic about her as a candidate, certainly not as enthusiastic as many were about Barack Obama. And
the enthusiasm issue is one that we have some interesting data on. All throughout the campaign, there has been less enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton, especially among the Democratic base, the core groups, the younger voters, the African-American and other minority voters. When the Access Hollywood videos came out a few weeks ago, the enthusiasm for those voters for Hillary Clinton really spiked. It wasn't so much for her as just a revulsion about the news they heard about Donald Trump. That seems to have worn off a little bit, or perhaps the stories, the WikiLeaks, the constant drips about the Clinton Foundation and everything else seem to have dimmed the enthusiasm, and perhaps this latest FBI revelation is having that same impact. There is some evidence that voter turnout among some Democratic constituencies is down. although the Hispanic vote appears to be up in early voting.
Right. So maybe could you elaborate a little more on that? Because I have we do have this situation now where many states allow early voting. And so while the votes are not counted and released in advance, we do have some indication of who is voting, of who is turned out. Can you elaborate a little on that, of what we see in terms of turnout in early voting?
And the simplest way to describe it is areas that have a high level, a high percentage of African-American voters are seeing lower turnout than they did in 2008 and 2012. And by the way, that shouldn't be surprising. Those were historic elections with the first candidate. So Hillary Clinton is not getting the same turnout from those areas as she did, as Barack Obama did. There appears to be, at least in Florida and perhaps in a couple of other areas, an increase in the Hispanic and Latino turnout. And, you know, that may be a result of the fact that Donald Trump has made such a huge issue of immigration. Having said that, there's a lot that these early numbers don't tell us. They're interesting. They give us some information, but they don't tell us, for example, if you're a registered Democrat, who did you vote for? Did you actually stay with your party ticket, or did you vote for Donald Trump? And the same is true on the other side. We don't know how the independent voters are breaking. There's a lot of evidence in the last week that they're beginning to break more solidly towards Donald Trump. One interesting part of this whole story about early voting is there's still a couple of states that don't allow it. And two of those states are absolutely critical in this election year. One of them is Pennsylvania. Another is New Hampshire. They have big Senate races, and they obviously are battleground states in the presidential race. If there is a big fallout from the Comey announcement about the reopening of the FBI email investigation, we will see it in full force in those states. And if Donald Trump were able to stay on message and people respond to that in a significant way, and he were to carry Pennsylvania and New Hampshire, it's almost certain that he would move into the White House. Still a long way to go, but 2 weeks ago, it looked as if the race for the White House was over. It looked as if Republicans were walking away from their nominee. Questions about control of the Senate were very much in the air. And now we're at a point in time where Hillary Clinton still has a slight edge, but it is not out of the realm of possibility that Trump comes back. And I would like to throw one more thing in. Just, it's really important for people to understand. If the polls on Election Day show Hillary Clinton ahead or Donald Trump ahead by 6 or 7 points nationally, there is no way that the other candidate is going to lose. If Hillary Clinton is up by 6 or 7 points in the polls, she is going to win the White House. However, if the polls show the race within 2 or 3 points, while that candidate is favored, there could be enough polling error to yield an upset.
I wanted to ask you, this is Chris Kasich, I wanted to ask you a quick question. One of the things that sort of a truism that I've always heard is that if you have an incumbent running in a race and the incumbent polls, you know, close to the election consistently below 50%, that's a sign of some kind of, you know, unease on the part of the voters. And so I kind of extrapolate, to Hillary Clinton being sort of a third term of Obama and being sort of an incumbent in a way. I don't know if either of those assumptions are correct, but how do you sort of, she's certainly an established candidate that everyone has known for years and years and years. And for her to not have broken above 50%, it would seem like is a poor reflection on her.
I think it is a sign of weakness. The general rule of thumb you cite is especially true in congressional and Senate races, where name recognition differences are often significant. In other words, in a Senate race where you might not know the name of the challenger, if the incumbent can't get above 50%, there's a lot of room for the challenger just to pick up the anybody-but type of vote. It's less true at the presidential level, because whatever else people know about this election, they know the names Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I think what we're seeing is her support is below the 50% level, and Donald Trump's is obviously as well, partly because a lot of people who are not committed to either party, generally loathe both of these candidates. They don't like either of the options. So right now they're sitting and saying, we're going to vote for a third party. And I would expect there will end up being a significant third party vote. If Hillary Clinton were to win with less than 50% of the vote, it would be an interesting historic footnote in that her husband was elected twice and never got 50% of the vote because of a fellow named Ross Perot, who was tapping into that same type of discontent that we're seeing today.
Well, I was going to mention, you said something about, you know, Republicans may be returning to Donald Trump. Looking at the Real Clear Politics averages and so forth, it seemed to me like the tightening in the last week or so or week or two did not involve Hillary Clinton necessarily losing support, but it did involve Donald Trump gaining support, perhaps at the expense of Gary Johnson in part. The two third party or the third and fourth party candidates that are sometimes polled, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, and Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, their combined support has been cut in about in half since what it was last summer. So people do seem to be gravitating to the major candidates.
Yeah, and by the way, that's a typical thing. Usually a third party candidate begins to fade as the election draws nearer. It's taken a little longer this time because of the unpopularity of the top two candidates, but that's exactly it. A lot of those Republicans are now saying, okay, we're going to come home. You know, there's a really unique situation in Utah where Evan McMullen has actually led in at least one poll, and he's been very close to Donald Trump and others. And I was out in Utah last week, and we were talking about the fact if the race looked like it was over, if Hillary Clinton is going into Election Day with momentum and a big lead, I expect the voters of Utah would cast their vote for Evan McMullen as a protest, because voters are aware of the larger implications of what's going on. However, with what we're seeing right now, Utah is a Republican, solid Republican state, and if it looks like Donald Trump has a serious chance to win, they will probably cast their votes for him, another example of those Republicans coming home.
Interesting.
I have one question about a particular state. Are you following North Carolina at all?
Yes, I lived in North Carolina for many years and started my polling business there. I have a lot of good friends there, and in fact, a poll was just released this afternoon showing Donald Trump ahead by 7 points.
Well, let me just say, this is fascinating because I was watching Fox Business today, and about 1:30, they declared that North Carolina was in the lean Democrat camp based on all these polls on the Real Clear Politics site. So could you discuss this a little bit? Because that's big news.
Yeah, what we're seeing in North Carolina is, first of all, North Carolina is a state that one time went for Obama and one time didn't. So it's very much of a swing state, very close. It is a state, by the way, that houses the teenage girl that Anthony Weiner was allegedly sexting to. So that's a bigger issue in the state. It's a state that has a large city in Charlotte that is certainly much more Democratic-leaning than the rural parts of the state.
About 10 seconds there.
Well, and right now I would say North Carolina is just too close to call. We have no idea what's going to happen there. If Survey USA is right with this new poll, that's very bad news for Hillary Clinton.
All right. Well, thank you very much for
Fantastic
joining us,
news.
Scott Rasmussen. And we'll be right back after this break with Tony Perkins from North Carolina.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it too? If you're like a lot of people, you would like to support the culture-changing efforts of the American Family Association. But there's the very pressing reality that your income must meet your current needs as well as act as seed for future income, either for the short term or for life. A charitable gift annuity might be your answer. A charitable gift annuity offers a unique method for both planning ahead for permanent income and supporting the work of the American Family Association. An AFA Foundation representative will walk you through the details of creating a charitable gift annuity, allowing you to decide if a charitable gift annuity is right for your individual financial situation. Connect with us today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit us online at afafoundation.net.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. One of the things that's so concerning to us as American citizens is when we hear that our highly regarded voting system, established so long ago, is showing signs of being tampered with. It concerns us when we hear that our justice system isn't just and could serve as a weapon against those of us with a Christian conscience. When God wants to judge a nation, He gives them wicked rulers. That was true nearly 500 years ago when John Calvin stated it, and it is certainly true today. As we've spoken before on this broadcast of the plight and blight of our nation and our churches, we know we're deserving of the judgment of God. Our trust isn't in presidents or judges, but in our sovereign God who calls His people to repent. We at American Decency join with others who are urging God's people to cry out to the Lord in repentance of our sins as a nation, as His church, and as individuals. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
To Washington Watch, I'm Tony Perkins. I want to thank Peter and Chris for filling in for me. We're actually on the road in North Carolina on the Values bus, and I was actually speaking at an event at Grace Baptist Church in Kinston, North Carolina, and so I got it kicked off, and then Peter and Chris filling in for me. So thanks so much for that. All right, folks, a lot happening across the country, a lot happening here in North Carolina. I woke up this morning in Washington, North Carolina, that is, and we've been on the road all day stopping at churches and rallies across the state, encouraging people to turn out and vote their values next Tuesday. I'm seeing a lot of energy out here, and it looks encouraging. And, you know, I heard the last part of Scott's interview there with Peter and Chris, that the latest poll just coming out this afternoon shows the Republicans up by 7% in North Carolina. I'm seeing a lot of energy here for the governor, the lieutenant governor, the state legislature that has been really in the crosshairs of the left because of their stand for, well, common sense, public safety, privacy issues. I know you're familiar with HB2, which was a response to what the mayor of Charlotte did by imposing her gender-confused policy on private entities there in the state of Charlotte. State leaders responded by simply saying, no, you can't do that. I'm not going to allow you to do it. You can if you want, but we're not going to force businesses and private institutions to do that. So anyway, the left has decided to make North Carolina an example, if they can, so far, it looks like they may fail, but it's not over yet. So continue to pray, and if you live in North Carolina, be sure that you are voting and that your friends and family are voting. All right, coming up, we're going to be joined by Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. The question is, might President Obama be working to further muddle U.S.-Israel relations before he leaves office? A Wall Street Journal report suggests the White House is considering possible options that would force a diplomatic solution between Israelis and Palestinians. Now, this is problematic. The President, John Kerry, been working on this. In fact, twice I was in Israel when John Kerry was doing his shuttle diplomacy between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and just made a complete mess of it. And there's some speculation that he may be working on yet another, drive-by attempt here as he leaves office before January. So anyway, we're going to discuss that. And joining us now to talk about that is my good friend Trent Franks. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Arizona. He's Vice Chair of Emerging Threats and Capabilities Subcommittee and Congressional Israel Allies Caucus. Congressman Trent Franks, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Tony. I always love being with you, sir.
And by the way, it was great to see you this weekend when I was out in Phoenix. You were there at the Choices Pregnancy Centers dinner, and it was so good to see you, and always appreciate all that you've done on behalf of protecting the sanctity of human life.
Well, sometimes I just wonder if the listeners know how much trouble that Tony Perkins goes to help these kinds of efforts across the country. Tony, you did a magnificent job.
Well, I appreciate that. It was great to see you and your wife and your kids there, and get a chance to meet your brother as well. So a great family. And in addition to your passion for life, you have been one of the voices outspoken on behalf of Israel in the United States Congress. And this Wall Street Journal report, troubling that the Obama White House on the way out may muddle relations between Israel and the United States even further before he leaves office.
Well, I think that this president has secretly harbored ill will toward Israel, and that the commitment to the American people to Israel has been about the only thing that has politically restrained him. And so I have great concern that in the lame duck he may do something. It ranges all the way from the possibility of having a resolution recognizing the Palestinian state or do something to call for Israel to completely stop all settlements of any kind in their own territory. You know, it's always amazing to me, Tony, that the President of the United States now has actually voiced more criticism for Israel building homes in their own country, in their own cities,
right,
than he has for Iran building nuclear weapons with which to threaten the entire peace and security of the world.
Including Israel.
This is Israel's greatest and most dangerous enemy is Iran, and Iran leaders have said that they would like to recreate the Holocaust. And of course, they say it didn't happen, and now they want to make it happen again. So that's the mindset that they have to deal with. And of course, the other thing, I mean, there are a lot of possibilities, but the other thing that they might do is just to lay out an imposed solution on the whole negotiation between the Palestinian and the Israel authorities. And you can imagine that the terms of that would be very unfavorable to Israel. Barack Obama has been the most anti-Israel president that we've had in my lifetime, and I think that Mrs. Clinton will only carry on that attitude. And you know, you mentioned my children, and Tony, I truly believe that your children and mine will walk in a very different place in the world if Israel is not strong and secure. So it's not just a matter of being supportive of Israel, which we both are. It's a matter of caring about our own children and the light of freedom that they will walk in or not, potentially based on how we treat Israel and based on what happens on that front line between civilization and jihad, which Israel occupies. It occupies that front line.
I agree 100%. I think when Israel is safe and strong, America is safe and strong. There is a direct correlation between the two.
I could not possibly agree with you more on both even a theological point of view. I'm going to be very open with you about that, but also on a geopolitical perspective, if Israel is safe, we are protecting America as well.
Trent, we're up against the break. Can you hold on for just 2 minutes? Because I want to ask
sure.
you on the other side of the break, one of the other possibilities that the president could take before he leaves office in January, I think people need to be aware of. My guest is Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. He's going to stick around, and I hope you will as well, because on the other side of the break, we're going to finish this conversation about what the president might be preparing as it pertains to Israel and the Palestinians. Then we're going to be taking your phone calls here as we're on the road with the Values Bus in the state of North Carolina. Don't go away, because we're coming back with a lot more Washington Watch right after this.
We'll be right back. making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, manufacturing data coming out earlier this week, and everybody's eyes seem to be on two things. This manufacturing data right now and the Federal Reserve data coming out, which is going to be a non-event, but they're looking for hints of December's rate hikes. I can't imagine anybody is considering the fact that the Fed could raise rates this week. But nonetheless, that is some important data. Now, that data will not be as important as the job data is coming out at the end of the week. But nonetheless, manufacturing data are very important. Manufacturing data are very important globally, of course. And we've got somewhat of upbeat information coming out of Chinese factory data. But let's keep in mind, this is Chinese factory data. Now, this does mean an awful lot for the oil sector, the energy sector in general, and of course, imports, exports, and global economy strength. So we look at this number very closely, but keep in mind, this is a number that is put out by the communist regime of China. They have not been the most forthcoming, upstanding, honest kind of numbers over the last 20 years. But we haven't learned a whole lot of lessons from that. And there's very little we can do to fact check the numbers. But nonetheless, it looks like it's a little bit stronger, and we are seeing some global markets a little bit higher as a result of this data. It'll remain to be seen whether it really begins to push up markets. Also, higher oil prices in spite of OPEC's deal to slow down production seeming to be a done deal, and it's not going to happen.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Had to, all these days start running together after a while. We're on the values bus in North Carolina, making our way across the state. Before it's over, we'll be one in all 100 counties. Now, I was sharing with the crowds today that, you know, we've had a team on this bus going, actually, they've been to over 20 states since September the 10th. They rolled out of the Values Voter Summit. And I've been hearing all these, you know, stories of how difficult it is on the bus. You know, every place we've stopped, we've had folks bringing us biscuits, donuts, apple crisp, blueberry crisp. I mean, the folks here in North Carolina have been absolutely great. And I'm trying, I just can't, I would much rather be in Washington, North Carolina than Washington, D.C. on any day. Been great. And tomorrow we'll be in Charlotte. I'll be speaking at the Power Lunch at First Baptist Church Charlotte in downtown Charlotte. So if you're in the area, come down and be a part of that tomorrow. All right, continuing our conversation with my good friend Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona, talking about what President Obama may have planned as it pertains to Israel and the Palestinians before he leaves office. Trent, thanks so much for sticking around and continuing this conversation. What might the president be able to do by executive order where he could just unilaterally do something that if you had, for instance, Hillary Clinton coming in, she wouldn't have to take the heat for it and not undo, but she wouldn't undo it, and whatever he does on his way out stands?
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, he has essentially the influence on whether or not to veto almost any conceivable resolution that the UN could pass. And so he could, you know, clear the way for her and just allow it to pass, and then she would have an easy transition. But the bottom line is that he knows that Israel is in trouble either in his administration or in a Clinton administration. So he may just decide to try to make it easier for her and, as you say, take the heat. The indications are that he's already asked his staff to come up with a list of options, and none of them essentially would be good for Israel. And just consider just the whole notion of letting the UN essentially do what they want to do. You know, consider the bias against Israel there. The UNESCO recently passed a resolution, and I think the vote was like 10-2. There were some abstentions, but they they call the Temple Mount by its Arab name only, and right. cited it as a historical, cultural, and religious site significant to Muslims only. I mean, there was no mention of Judaism or Christianity. Christianity has existed about 600 years longer than Islam, and Judaism has existed thousands of years longer. And, of course, they had the primary, Solomon's Temple was built there. And I remember I was in Israel not so long ago, and we were told, now we ignored it, but we were told not to mention any indication that Solomon's Temple was ever there. So the gross, arrogant distortion and outright obliteration of history here is something that the Obama administration is complicit with, and it is it's a disgrace, and I think it endangers America in the long run and our own children.
And what's extremely troubling about this to me, Congressman Franks, is that despite the initiatives, what I would describe as anti-Israel initiatives of this administration, or at least indifference at best toward Israel, that Israel has actually enjoyed pretty good relationships with their Sunni Arab neighbors like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates because of the common threat that Iran poses to them. And so they've been working together, and there's actually a nucleus of peace that is coming together in that region of the world in spite of what this administration has done.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, anytime you have Israel and Saudi Arabia working together this closely because they understand how dangerous to both of them a nuclear Iran is, you understand the dynamics have changed there. And of course, I don't even know how to articulate the things that Barack Obama has done to help Iran stay on a trajectory to gain nuclear weapons capability. I think that they have a better chance of gaining a nuclear weapons capability with the Iran deal than they ever had without it. Mm-hmm. So not only did it not preclude it, like some of the distorted pundits say, but it absolutely made it more possible and plausible for Iran to gain nuclear weapons. And I really, not to sound trite here, but Tony, I think if Iran gains nuclear weapons, just out of decency and protocol, they ought to name their first warhead Barack Obama, because it is unbelievable. It is unbelievable what this man has done to empower not only Israel's greatest enemy, but the most prolific sponsor of terrorism on this planet. And it is very possible, because Barack Obama once walked the halls of the White House, that my children and your children will walk in the shadows of nuclear terrorism.
Well, I can't add anything to that, because I believe you're absolutely right. And not only did we facilitate the acceleration of them getting nuclear weapons, but we're also giving them a lot of cash along the way to do some other devious acts. Congressman Trent Franks, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a great, great day. Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. As I said, we're on the road. We're in Kinston, North Carolina. And we are on our way to Charlotte later this evening. But we're going to take your phone calls here on Washington Watch. We're going to find out, what is it that's motivating you to go to vote? What's the number one issue motivating you to vote?
Every day, more schools around the country are giving in to the transgender agenda. Boys claiming to be female are already being allowed into girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. What can parents do to stop this disturbing trend from spreading to their children's schools? Family Research Council is now offering a new resource to help. A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education is a concise brochure that can be downloaded at frc.org/gender. To order hard copies, call 800-225-4008. You'll learn valuable tips on how to talk to your children, their teachers, school board members, neighbors, and fellow churchgoers, and the steps you can take to prevent the advancement of the transgender agenda in your school. Again, the number is 800-225-4008 to request this brochure. Your gift of just $5 will cover the cost of shipping and handling, and additional copies are available for $1. Thank you for standing strong for the family.
I think that we are called not to worry about our finances as long as we are honoring and pleasing God with those same finances.
Stewardship matters, even in these uncertain times.
God is faithful to help us weather the storms.
Visit afastore.net to find the DVD Financial Preparation for Uncertain Times with Dan Celia and all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
American Family Radio presents Pray and Vote.
In Jesus' name.
If we as God's people will humble ourselves and pray, He will hear our prayers and heal our land. Today, just a week before Election Day, Tim Wildman, Franklin Graham, and others will pray for the elections and for our nation. God is our one true hope. Listen to American Family Radio today, beginning at 5 p.m. Central, for Pray and Vote.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. As I mentioned earlier, we are broadcasting from the Values bus, making our way across North Carolina, hitting all 100 counties. We're at, right now, actually broadcasting from Grace Baptist Church in Goldsboro. Actually, I had said Kinston earlier. That was where we were. I can't even keep up. We're at so many different places. But I will remember all of the stops by the food that we've gotten. The folks in North Carolina have been great to us. They've added a lot of value to our values bus. All right, 866-372-7234. Here's what I want to talk about this afternoon as we are just days away. I mean, 1 week away from the election. I just want to know, number one issue, and I'm going to keep a poll here. I want to know, number one issue, why are you voting? And if you can't get through, just put it on Twitter, at T Perkins on Twitter. But I want to know, what is it? What is it that is motivating? Number one issue. And I know there's, I'm not saying you're a single issue candidate. There's many issues, but what rises to the top of your issues, of your concerns, that's motivating you to vote and hopefully encourage others to vote in this all-important election? 866-372-7234. And love to hear from some of our first-time callers today. Give us a call. Let us know what is your number one issue as you prepare. Maybe you've already voted. Maybe you've early voted or you're going to early vote. But what is it that is at the top of your list of concerns that's motivating you to vote? Can be anything, anything. 866-372-7234 on Twitter, at T Perkins. Already heard from some of our bot listeners on Twitter commenting on the hospitality we've received. Hey, look, I might do this. I might put the values bus up kind of to the highest bidder during the midterm elections. Whatever state offers the best incentives to come and bring the values bus, then we might just roll through your state. It's going to be hard to top the hospitality I've seen here in North Carolina, though. All right, let's go to Missouri, where Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. My main
reason for voting. I want to stop partial birth abortion. One candidate's for it, one candidate's against it, and I want it stopped.
All right. That's clear enough, and you're and the party platforms are very clear on the issue of life. And I've made this point every day because we've got a great resource for folks at TonyPerkins.com. It is the party platform and a comparison of the party platforms. And in one platform makes very clear that it recognizes the sanctity of human life and wants to end abortion as we know it. The other party platform not only wants to continue abortion, but wants to eliminate the Hyde Amendment, which is the firewall, if you will, between you, the taxpayer, and elective abortions in this country. And here's one thing we do know from government, from history, from economics, whatever, any way you look at this. What the government pays for, it gets more of. So if the government is all of a sudden funding elective abortions, guess what's going to happen, folks? There's going to be more of them, and you're going to be paying for more of them. And you are going to be, as a taxpayer, a party to the continuation of abortion. Now, that's not just partial birth abortion. That's we're talking all abortions. Bob, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Indiana, where Kevin is on the line. Kevin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you. I guess the biggest thing that when the election and everything, when we started running for the who is going to vote for, I was up in the air and I've been listening to everything. I think what finally made me get motivated and go was just all the lying and deceit that Ms. Clinton has done, and how she continues to break the law and do things and just continues to get away with it. And what I'm afraid of, we put her in a position of power, how much more is she going to be able to do to the American people that she's already destroyed a lot.
Mm-hmm. So let me be clear on this. So you were, let me understand this, you were kind of indifferent, undecided, but when this latest revelation broke of more deceit and lies, that's really now become a motivating factor for you.
Absolutely. I mean, I was thinking, you know, well, Trump, you know, he doesn't have, you know, maybe he's not very political, and you know, that was kind of okay at the beginning. You thought, well, maybe not. Maybe we need somebody in there that knows what they're doing. But you know, we definitely don't need someone in there that's going to take us deeper into the hole and just keep lying and deceiving the American people with everything. I mean, every time I open the paper, every time I turn on the TV, I feel like there's just another scandal or another lie. And with Trump, I think he's going to keep some of the values that we have as Christians. And, you know, I think it's our the best chance that we've got.
Okay, fair enough, Kevin. I appreciate the call. I actually think Kevin is reflective of what we actually have seen in the last 4 or 5 days in the polls. We were talking about this yesterday with Jeff Rowe. But there's further analysis out today that shows that those conservative-leaning voters who were kind of indifferent in this election and may not have voted, kind of sitting on the sidelines, now are engaging because of the revelations of further corruption in the Clinton surrounding Hillary Clinton. The FBI announcing that they're going to reopen that investigation. Kevin, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling and sharing that. We're going to go to Tennessee, where Roger is on the line. Roger, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you.
All right, what's your number one issue, Roger?
My number one issue is trust. I'm a prior U.S. Navy veteran, God-fearing, loving man, and with what happened in Benghazi, and with all the email, the other lies and deceit that keep coming out daily, it has caused me to actually go and vote for Trump.
All right. Well, Roger, let me first say thank you for your service to our country. And, you know, that is a critical component because so much flows from that, the issue of trust, whether or not you can trust someone, A, to do what they said they're going to do, but trust to adhere to the Constitution, trust to put American interest first. I mean, people can say whatever they want, But if they have no track record that would suggest that you can trust them, that makes it extremely difficult. But you're right. I think these candidates have a track record. It shows us very clearly whether or not we can trust them. Roger, appreciate that call. Thanks so much for calling in and listening to Washington Watch. Let's go to South Carolina, where Bobby is on the line. Bobby, welcome to Washington Watch.
How you doing, Tony?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Great. And I would say the number one reason why I'm voting is to help protect the innocent babies of abortion.
Well, you're not alone. Bobby, you're not alone. I think there's a lot of folks that the life issue, and again, there has, I don't think there's ever been a clear contrast between the parties on the issue of life. Never has the Democratic Party gone so far as to say that they want to eliminate the Hyde Amendment in the 40 years that it's been there and force taxpayers to be a part of elective abortions. Now, to be very clear, I mean, there's funding that goes to abortions today, but they are not elective abortions. Now, be good to see all of it eliminated. They want to eliminate that protection between taxpayers and, again, elective abortions. That's significant. And that provides a very, very clear contrast between the two parties. And the Republican Party, not only do you have a platform that says that they want to protect all human life, I mean, for the first time you've got a candidate saying that he wants to see Roe v. Wade overturned. That's pretty significant in my view. Bobby, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you being a listener of Washington Watch. All right, let's go to the bluegrass state of Kentucky, where Frank is on the line. Frank, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. The reason why I called, without life, there is no reason to vote. We don't vote for the dead. So life starts, people can vote whatever they want to, which is a good thing, some of the things that I've heard on the radio. But without life, there's no reason to vote. I don't understand. Life starts at the top.
Right. Well, even the founders recognize that in the Declaration of Independence, recognizing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that those are inalienable rights granted to us not by government, but by God, to be protected. And life, without life, none of these other things matter. Now, I don't know. Maybe the Democratic Party, you can still vote if you don't have life. A lot of dead people vote. But life is a critical issue. Critical issue. And I think I said this yesterday on the program, Frank, but in my experience in politics, I'm not going to say 100% of the time, I would say 85% of the time, if a candidate is right on life, on the life issue, if they recognize that life is sacred because it's created in the image of God, therefore it's deserving to be protected under our laws, then they're going to be right on most other things. Again, I'd say 100% of the time, but at least 85% of the time. Frank, thanks so much for being a faithful listener to Washington Watch. Let's go to, well, we're not going to go there because we're here already, but I'm going to talk to Denise here in North Carolina. Denise, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Where are you calling from in North Carolina?
I'm actually in Lincoln and Alexander County.
Okay. All right. Well, what's your number one reason for being motivated to go and vote?
Because of our religious freedom and possibly having those taken away if Hillary gets in.
You are not alone. We actually, last week, I mentioned that we were doing a poll on the website, TonyPerkins.com, taking a survey. Two things. We were asking people if they were going to vote, and it was 99%. I mean, almost all of our listeners. And let me just say this. All right, y'all extend your arm, move it to your back, and pat yourself on the back. The listeners of Washington Watch, almost 100% voting. Participating in this process, which is good. I mean, as I said before, as Americans, we have the right to vote, as Christians, we have a responsibility and an obligation to vote. And we also asked a list of the top issues that people felt were important, and by far, religious liberty was the number one issue. And I can make an argument for that, because I think on religious liberty, everything else hinges on it. My view of life springs forth from my faith in Jesus Christ, my understanding of the Scripture. And so therefore, my ability to live faithful and true to the teachings of Scripture causes me to take a stand for human life, meaning that, like, for instance, Hobby Lobby, that's why they were opposed to the HHS mandate, forcing them to provide in their health care plans not just contraceptives, but abortifacients. And so that springs from religious liberty. And, of course, you could talk about the bakers and others, the florist, and the list goes on. Because religious liberty, as Christians, it's the ability to live your life, not just in your house or on the weekends in your church, but to live your life everywhere, each and every day, according to your faith. Denise, thanks so much for calling, and appreciate you listening. And grateful once again to the folks in North Carolina for the wonderful hospitality. Here's some responses coming in from Twitter. Top issues, SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States, judges. Many, many people weighing in on that one, and that's true. Again, I mean, all these things are intertwined. Life, protecting the border, strengthening the nation, Hillary's corruption, GOP platform, there you go. It embraces all of it. Restoring conservatism. All of these valid and good responses. So folks, keep those coming in on Twitter, at T. Perkins. Give us your number one reason that you're being that you're motivated to go and vote next Tuesday. Maybe you voted early. Now, if I were coming from the other side of the political perspective, I would be saying vote early and often, but we only vote once as conservatives, but we do encourage others to go and vote. All right, so make sure your family, friends, neighbors are voting. And again, I encourage you, check out TonyPerkins.com. And it's got links over to FRC Action and FRC, where we've got great resources. I'm telling you that we've got a video about the Supreme Court, which shows the number of cases that were decided by a 5-4 margin over the last many years and why that court is important. We also have that short video on the platform comparing them. That has been viewed by, I think, over 1 million people now. Put that on your Facebook page. Share it with your friends, pastors. You can play it in church. It's completely legal to do. Use it so that we don't lose our freedoms. Folks, thanks so much for listening. I got to get back out on the bus, because we got places to go here in North Carolina, but tune in again tomorrow. Thanks so much for being with us, and I encourage you once again with the words of the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 6. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.